Really?
We maybe confirm that that's the truth. Get the doors.
Igor, did you get the doors? Yeah, no, what's happening? I know.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome back to our third day of HGC 25. I want to thank everyone who was at the event last night. I think it really showed the breadth of the community around high-throughput computing. And as I think a lot of speakers last night pointed out, this community doesn't happen accidentally or randomly. It happens because of continued conscious effort by people like Christina and Tim, our first two speakers, who are going to tell us a little bit about how they're trying to build, foster, and extend these communities. Thank you. I think Christina's starting.
All right. Thanks, Greg. So I'm, again, Christina Cook, OSG research facilitation lead, and I'm up here with Tim Cartwright, OSG campus coordinator. And as Greg introduced, we're going to be talking today about building communities through the lens of contributing to the Open Science Pool and OSDF. So to set the stage for talking about that, we're going to flash up an arrow that by now should be very familiar to all of you, the translational computer science feedback loop. And so we had a panel on this yesterday. And what we're going to focus on today is communities. Now we have actually several different communities that we engage with researchers, research staff, campuses. And so this talk is going to focus on our campus community. And what we want folks to take away is that building that community is inseparable from the other pieces of that arrow, from providing the services like the OSDF, OS pool, OS store as the locale, and the development that happens in the HD Condor and the Pelican teams. Because without the actual development that happens through those teams, there's nothing for the community to actually use. But without the community, then there's no guidance or direction. You end up for the lab and locale, you end up in a with a, you know, if you build it, they will come situation. When you really need the input and the needs of the community to drive your development. And then once you have that community, you have to continue to support it. You have a responsibility to it, especially if you want to maintain those trust relationships. So what we're going to talk about today is different aspects of this inseparability. I'm going to go first and talk a little bit about how we build the community of contributors, how we, you know, both practices we have in general, and then as some specific examples about a newer community that we're trying to build around storage. And then Tim will take over and cover a little more of the feedback part of the arrow, how this connection between the services, the developers, the community are all moving us forward. So to kick things off, I'm going to briefly touch on how we build the community of contributors directly, some of the practices and methodologies we have. And so the first one, I think this is the practice, is the famous let's talk, talking to people. So we have these, I always want to say like face-to-face conversations. I guess they're still face-to-face even if they're on Zoom. So on Zoom or in person, conversations, direct conversations with people that can happen in the forums that are described up here. So we have different spaces for those conversations to happen. And of course, conversations help you build relationships. They're an effective way to go through technical processes. I don't know if any of you have tried to ever solve a problem via an email ticket system and at some point been like, I just need to talk to somebody. That's another part of this process. But then also, through these conversations, we find out things we couldn't have found out any other way. So it's a critical part of eliciting the feedback we need to drive that translational computer science process. You know, you can have surveys, you can have emails, but having a conversation with someone is more likely to bring out those details that help us move forward. In addition to talking to people, you know, it's not the only way. You can connect with us online through various means, contact us, email, Slack, our website. And those are some practices and some tools we have for building the community of campus contributors in general. So now I want to narrow in and talk about a new community that we're building around storage. So to get to this new community, I want to talk a little bit about where we've been. So maybe not quite in the black and white days, but previously, contribution to the OS pool was really quite difficult. Just yesterday at the event last afternoon, I was talking to some people and they're like, yeah, we used to have to give a lot of training to people who wanted to contribute to the OS pool. And around 2019, campuses appear with CC Star computing grants, and that wasn't really going to work anymore. So what do we do? Now, there's some other things I think that happened between that second and third bullet, but eventually, Tim became the campus coordinator and really started to evolve a process that has continued to evolve based on interactions with the community, and he'll talk a little bit about that in his section. But I think this was the key thing that we had to do as an organization in order to build community was to go from processes that were a little bespoke, you know, artisanal, one might say, to processes that are reproducible, you know, and well-defined, and, you know, where we actually have a template that we can follow. Okay, so that's the OS pool. So Open Science Data Federation. It's kind of the same story. The OSDF was this kind of one-off data delivery platform, very tightly coupled to the OS pool. And, you know, development, there was some, but not a lot. And so first we have Pelican as a way to standardize and formalize the tool of the Data Federation. And now, here we are again, CC Star Storage Awards appearing on our doorstep. Now what? We have to go through that same experience. So let's learn from what we did before from building the compute contribution community. So I am now the point person for now for storage contributions, and we're working on building a process similar to the compute contribution process and learning from those experiences so that we can keep building this community. And moving forward, the slide said new community storage, but we really want this to be, in some ways, it's continuing the existing community. We want this to be one community of contributors. It's not like we're going to separate the storage and compute people. Campuses are all contributing together, and we want them to all be kind of in the same group. So before I talk about where we are so far with that process of bringing people into the community, contributing storage, I want to just take a quick step to the side and define the OS store. So I think most people know what the OSDF is and the OS pool. Like, what the heck is the OS store? Well, as I started talking to campuses and with people in this team about storage contributions, we tend to say, well, we're contributing storage to the OSDF. But the OSDF isn't actually a storage service, it's a data delivery network, and it's backed by object stores. So that may seem like a very technical fine point, but we felt like it was important to give a name to the storage contributions that are then being, shared or made available via the OSDF, especially because some of the storage contributions are essentially being delegated to us as path to decide what data can go into them and what data should be shared. So that collection of contributed storage from campuses now has a name, OS Store. You can let us know whether you think that's an improvement or not over just the collection of contributed storage from campuses that's exposed through the OSDF. But that's what it is when you see it on future slides. So what does our process look like right now? If any of you have contributed compute to the OS pool, you know that the first big thing is a kickoff meeting with Tim, and then some planning, and then an integration. And we're going to follow that same formula. If you're interested in contributing storage, becoming part of that community, we'll have a meeting. We'll talk about goals and implementation details. Some of the questions we'll talk about are, what does contribution look like? For the storage grants, it's a little more flexible than compute in some ways. Some people are just sharing storage for path to delegate and use. Some people have data that they want to share. So we can talk about that. There'll need to be some Pelican OSDF services run. How are those going to be operated? How much storage is being shared? Some other details. And then after this meeting, I didn't make a slide on like what happens next. A, partially because we're still working on making that process really reproducible. And B, it depends on your answers to these questions. It's a little bit more of a choose your own adventure kind of situation at this point. And so the goal for next year is we can give you a nice clear like roadmap of exactly what's gonna happen. Okay, so the last community I want to talk about, yet another new community of people who want to share their data. So we've got all this great space in the OS store that campuses have contributed to us. Let's fill it up with data that people want to share with broader communities, collaborators, other folks. So here we are again, yet another methodology or process in progress where we're going from something that has been pretty ad hoc to something that's more formal. So I would say in the, I think our compute contribution process is quite mature. It's at the level of like communities can use it. Storage is maybe at the locale level. This is still in the lab. But the process is get in touch. We have a meeting. Discussing your goals, data size, how you want to control access to that data, and then we implement. So you can see what we have so far, because we have done this with a few data sets at this lovely link summary. There's information about the data sets. If it's public, there's even a little sample object you can pull. And so this is yet another community that we're trying to build. So that we can have all the benefits of the feedback and development that come along with it. And so with that, I'm going to turn things over to Tim to shift the focus.
Okay. Oh, one second, just a follow up on Christina's or a store introduction. I would like everyone, the community, to think about the OS store as at some level an extension of part of what OSDF is providing today, which is a staging of object in the caches, because I view it as an extension of our, let's call it, caching capabilities in OSDF. At the moment, it's treated somewhat differently because it's managed. Christina decides that you should get your data stored in the OS store for a given amount of time. It is not a place to keep your data permanently. It is caching it for whatever purpose it is. And that is what is part of OSDF. So helping us to formalize this vision that OSDF is allowing the community to stage their data in a way that enables it to be accessible effectively by the community is really the long-term vision of where we are heading. So, and thank you for putting the spotlight on the OS store.
Thanks, Marco.
Okay, thank you. So I will continue talking about how the community and this feedback cycle has driven and continues to drive changes to the OS pool. And as Christina promised, I'm going to sort of start a little bit with history and methodology. So to recap, the old news here is that a while ago, we sort of developed this new process, or, you know, streamlined process for integrating campus sites into the OS pool. And actually, I was thinking about it, and I believe that Oral Roberts University might have been the second campus that we integrated with this new process. So thank you, Stephen, for being a willing guinea pig there. And this has been going well. I would say, though, that even though the focus now is a little bit more on these interactions, direct interactions with the campus, we've sort of gotten the feedback that it would still be helpful to have written details available. That's not necessarily how the whole process is going to be driven, but it is a nice reference. So this is useful for new integrations. We can just say, here are the requirements on a site that you need to have in advance. It also turns out that it's really helpful when a campus has gone through some significant changes with the cluster that's contributing, and there are questions about, are we ready for reintegration or restart, something like that. So based on this feedback, we've developed and posted a checklist now. There's the URL. The one that's up there right now is pretty specific to the case where you're using a hosted CE and Slurm is your underlying cluster. We'll extend this. We'll make sure that it's clear if Condor is your underlying cluster, there's some changes. And then if you're contributing using containers, that's a very different situation. We'll have a separate section for that. So once you're up and running, once a campus is up and running, it's very clear that campus staff, from the site admins all the way up through leadership, really want information on how those contributions are working. And especially at the leadership level, being able to share information about what science is being supported via those contributions. And so I say the team, but it's really mostly Marone and Todd Tenenbaum here who developed the CE dashboard. This was demoed a year ago. Took a little while, but we actually now have this in production for hosted CEs, sites that are contributing that way. And there's the URL. You can go there right now. And just to give a brief look at it, this is just a screenshot of one part of what's available. But you can see there's quite a bit of rich data there. And if you're interested in seeing more, a little later this morning, Todd, as the developer, will actually be giving a more complete demo of the CE dashboard. So if you're part of the campus track, you get to see that. So for next steps here, we do want to get the campus-hosted HD Condor CEs into this view as well. But at the same time, we're sort of also back to the, getting feedback from the community. How would you find this useful? What ways would you use this? And then what improvements would you like to see to make this more useful to you? This is version 1.0. We'd like to keep this going forward for the next many years. And that all depends on feedback from the community. It's so pretty. One of the ways actually that the dashboard is helping us internally is in our practices of sort of proactive monitoring for the community. So on the OS pool side, our goal is to identify, triage, and notify or take action on issues within a week of onset. That's the hope. As I like to say, we probably know that your SQuID proxy service is failing before you do. So we're looking for changes and contributions. Sometimes those are fine, and we just need to understand what's going on with the campus. Sometimes there's action to take. Sometimes the action is on ourselves, right? Sometimes we discover issues with our infrastructure, and so we set up our own processes to take action on that. In other cases, we think that things might be going on with your campus infrastructure, and then we identify that for you, and we'll follow up just to see how things are going and if there's anything we can help with. And the CE dashboard, I use this now every day. It's one of the tools that I use, at least for the hosted CEs, to check on the health of contributions from the sites that are there. OSDF monitoring, because this is a newer offering and a newer community, we're still figuring out what to do here. Literally in the last, sorry, get there in a sec. The Pelican team, so the Pelican team who develops the software that underlies the OSDF, they're doing a lot of the monitoring right now. If you think about it, they do translational computer science too, and the OSDF is their primary locale. So it's very important for them right now to be paying attention to that. But even I've started doing this, and we have some relatively new reporting on the OSDF. And I'm in particular looking at or looking for where OSDF issues might be affecting OS pool usage as a whole. So this is very much something we're working on and figuring out. And again, we really welcome, I mean, this is the theme, right? But we really welcome feedback from all of you who are part of this and how could we better be monitoring both the OS pool and OSDF. Okay, I'm going to talk about how feedback has led to four updates to the OS pool over the last year or so. I'm going to go through these a little bit quickly. If you have questions on the details, please come to the campus track for the rest of this morning. There'll be plenty of opportunity to ask questions or just find me personally and we can talk about it sometime this week. So number one, feedback was from the campus perspective, does my site need to have Singularity or AppTainer installed on all the worker nodes? And why do we care? These days, sort of majority of researcher jobs will need to run inside of a container on the system they land on, so that you need to have the container software. And I'm happy to report that as of February, the answer to this question is no. You don't have to provide Singularity or AppTainer yourself. There's a copy that comes with the HT Condor that gets installed as part of a glide-in. And as you can see from this sort of simplified algorithm here, number three is the thing that got added. And so we can detect and use the copy that comes with Condor. You can still use the one and two. You can still use your site copy if you need to, but you don't have to. We got a lot of feedback on this one ongoing. So a little bit of background. When a glide-in job starts up on a system, and this is true of containers as well, it will create a directory for itself in the scratch space that you've provided, and it puts everything there. And in some cases, those directories were getting left behind, and we weren't cleaning up our trash. Okay, and that was bad because we're filling up your disk, but it's bad just because we're leaving our trash on your system. So also in February, and this was kind of a team effort with the Path team, but we developed and deployed a new system to clean up the trash that we leave behind. So every new glide-in that starts up is going to look for trash from other glide-ins that have been left there and will safely remove as much of that as it can. I would say that this has been successful in the sense that since we've deployed this, I think I've had maybe one or two reports of individual nodes having filled scratch directories. And honestly, by the time I got around to or got to talking to the campus about it, they'd already taken care of it and it wasn't really an issue anymore and it didn't come back. So I think this has been pretty successful. That being said, what we deployed was for the CE-based glide-ins only. And so now the new feedback is, gosh, we would like the same thing for the container-based glide-ins. And I'm happy to report that this MOTS has done this basically, and it's in testing right now. And we plan to deploy this in a week or two. A few, so the other method of contributing is the container, and that's the OS pool execution point container and its image. We provide the image, so a few updates there. Number one, several sites were asking us how to contribute GPUs using the container method, and that's done now. I've put the sort of technobabble on there in case you're curious, but basically it's just a few extra or changes to your Docker command, and then the container will identify and contribute those GPUs. Another one that we heard a lot was in the standard Docker command that we recommended to launch the container. It included dash dash privileged, which gives the new container quite a bit of privileges on the system. And so the feedback was, do we really need to do dash dash privileged? And as of quite recently, the answer is no, sort of. We're pulling back on the privileges that we now need. We don't need all of them. We specify some very specific ones. And again, there's the technobabble if you're interested. All of this is now reflected on our standard documentation for contributing using containers. And I'd really like to call out Matt Westfall. He's really been working on all of this, everything you see in the slide, and all the documentation updates were Matt. So thank you, Matt, for that. Also, it means you can pester him if you have questions. And finally, there are times when site admins want to know something about the researcher jobs that are running within glide-ins. And so TJ, there he is, one of the Condor developers updated the existing Condor Who tool, which can tell you about running researcher jobs, to work in the context of a running glide-in. That took some effort. And this is just a edited example of the output, but basically each line you're seeing on there corresponds to one researcher job running in that glide-in, and you can get some information about it. We can get some information about it too. So it's possible that if there are issues with a site and you're concerned that maybe a researcher job is, gone rogue or something like that, we may ask you to run this and send us the output because it would also help us tie together a bunch of things that are otherwise hard to sort of do forensics on. And that is also documented. So to wrap up for both of us, really, I would just like to remind everyone to please be an active part of this community. If your campus is contributing in any way to the OSDF, the OS store, the OS pool, this community and building this community, supporting this community is inseparable from the process of actually providing these services. And just as a repeat, here's some ways to reach out to us, things like Slack, and we have a OSDF, OS Pool contributors mailing list. Just reach out to us to get added to those. We have the weekly campus meetups on Wednesdays. The announcements for that go to that mailing list on the second bullet, so that's one reason to join. Also, I should note that during the summer, we tend to just do alternate weeks because there are a lot fewer people around. And of course, you can always email us. I want to say, I never like these support at kinds of email addresses. I want you to know that the emails to that support list go to the people in this room, me, Christina, Jeff, all of us. You're not reaching out to some nebulous thing. You're talking to the people in this room who actually do the support. Okay, we'll take questions, but before we do, I just want to clarify what's going on next. So if you want to continue on with sort of this campus and CC Star theme, that is going to be upstairs in room 201. And we have a sort of the rest of the morning, some activities planned. It'll be more interactive, a little more informal. If you want to stay here for you know, more talks and tutorials, you'll stay in this room. So, and that's it for me. Any question for us? Any questions? And then Brown, I see this.
So maybe this is more of a comment than a question. Can you go back to the container and privileges? So I was unaware that actually a lot of other people complain about it, which I shouldn't be surprised. This is more, I would say, more an announcement. I have been struggling with this kind of stuff in the Kubernetes world, and we have a talk tomorrow afternoon about Kubernetes and Glidings. I think the same principles would apply to the bare metal Docker thing. So if anybody in the audience is interested in this kind of problem, you should probably attend my talk tomorrow. Just look for Kubernetes and Glidings in the agenda.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Igor. So Matt, I want you to, this slide very specifically mentions the Docker command or the Docker way of running the containers, because at least the last I heard, we weren't all the way there yet with the same kinds of things for Kubernetes. Or maybe it's coming along. But anyway, you guys should talk. Yeah, great. That's good to hear.
Hi, so thank you both. That was really interesting. It's great to see what you've been up to the past year. This is more of a reply than a question, but it's a reply to Christina's point about what do we think about the naming of the OS store? And I was just going to make a comment that I think the addition of names actually serves as a barrier to entry to new users.
Okay.
And if you go to the OSG site that you Google for, there's a lot of different tools there. And I think that that imposes some amount of just difficulty and additional time and burden. I mean, even down to like when I was first learning the OSG, the Flock and Glidden and all this stuff, it makes it harder.
Yeah.
And so if there's a way to somehow reduce what a normal user encounters, even if, I mean, I understand why all these names exist, they make sense. But as they grow over time, and you know, since I entered, there's so many more.
Yeah.
And even just being here as a more casual user than the rest of everybody, I struggle sometimes with the names. Like I didn't even know I was using Pelican this whole time, but I was. So I'm learning, and that's great. But I think for new users, it can eventually become too burdensome and scare them off. So
yeah.
Just a thought that if there's a way to maybe keep the names, but keep them less maybe exposed to new users.
Yeah. Or think really critically about what we communicate when, to whom, to which audiences. I think that's a really good point. Yeah. Thank you, Eric.
Rachel?
Hi. Just kind of building off of that. So for those that don't know, I recently transferred to Georgia Tech, and we run Condor. I'm a big fan, love it. But really, the individuals that manage our cluster are previous Condor staff. And it's been really challenging for me to kind of spread the good news and the good word about Condor to our system administrators, because I think they feel very overwhelmed by the terminology and they don't really feel very empowered and independent. I think, and it's really slowing my progress down as far as spreading the good news. So what is there kind of a roadmap for system administrators or like a training like the OSG school in the works for these new system administrators that, you know, maybe don't want to come to office hours because they don't have a list of questions? and they don't know you and they don't know the community. How can I do my best to make them feel empowered without giving them the Condor manual? Like, is there a different
Yeah.
medium?
So it's a good question. I don't think we have anything in the works for training, but I think we should have a conversation about, is how big is this audience of people who are trying to run Condor who feel stuck, and then what's the right solution for supporting them? I think your point about people don't always have questions is a good one. We actually The campus meetups, we were kind of doing, well, we'll have every other week, we'll have like open, people can bring their questions. And then we got feedback that people like to come to something where they're going to learn something, and then questions will emerge, but they like that focus. And so I think that's a good point for us to consider in terms of supporting this community of people.
And I'll add that to some extent, over the last couple of years, I think our focus has been less on the campuses that are contributing from Condor clusters because they're by far the minority. And so I've learned the basics of SLURM because that's most of who I'm talking to. And even there, I think the same comment applies, actually, that we can do a better job of, and to some extent, the checklist that I mentioned is sort of one step in that direction where we can give more specific, concrete steps that, in this case, a SLURM administrator would need to be thinking about before we sit down for that actual live integration session. So, baby steps, we're still working on it. Yeah, absolutely. Kurt?
Just a quick comment, really. The CE dashboard is really cool. And thinking about OSDF, if one is contributing data into OS Store, it'd be great to have a dashboard analogous to that where we can see the flows, like cache hits, cache misses, which projects are actually utilizing OSDF.
One element on the dashboard that may be semi-related is we would like to have information about the IO generated by the OS pool on the site. So we have information, but at the moment we don't display it. And we are hearing from campuses about how much load will this thing put on our network. So that is sort of semi in the direction that you are looking at as when you are bringing your object. You would like to have a dashboard to the object store from the perspective of the origin. We're here, it is the perspective of the CE. And yes, I want to make another comment that I think is also related to Igor's comment that containers are wonderful, and because they really take us all the way back 40 years ago to 8.0s, that you ship one thing and it's it. The challenge that we are facing, and Matt is working on some of it, is you would like to say, okay, I have this image running, right, Greg? It's not the container, it's the image that this
Words matter, Marone. Words matter.
I know, I know. Speaking about voices, I have this image and I launch it, whether it's Docker or whatever is your favorite launcher on my desktop, and it works. Now I deposit it, I place it in the OS pool, and what happens? Now, the problem is that your container may be the image that will be put into a container somewhere in the OS pool may be nested under a number of containers. It is a container in a container in a container, and some of these containers in the pipe are not running with root permission. So the question is, what's happening to your container when it's running under this nested structure compared to the container that's running on your desktop? And I'm sure that the facilitators would like to say it all looks the same. And one of the things that we got from LIGO, they said, okay, I'm running my my jobs on the condo pool at Caltech, and if I'm running out of memory, I'm being kicked out, so I know something is wrong. But then when I'm sending it in a container and container and container, it runs there, and all hell breaks loose because I'm running out of memory, because I may kill the Glyden, because the Glyden is running in a C group, but there's no C group inside it. So that is a struggle that we have, is how to make the container environment to look as similar to what's happening on your desktop, where the container is gives you the illusion everything is there. It allowed to ship it and everything will be fine. So that will keep us off the street for definitely Matt, right? Where are you? Yeah, it keeps him off the street. Okay, let's go.
Okay, thank you, Marone. You know, the sign of any good party is splitting into two different groups, and that's what we're going to do right now. So the campus people, they are meeting with Christina and Tim upstairs in room 201. But there will be continued technical talks in this room here. I'm curious, who here, raise your hand, if you've seen the translational computer science slide once, at least once. Okay, who's seen it twice? Yeah, who's seen it three times? Yeah, I think this shows how important it is. And when we talk about translational computer science, it means that we're doing research with our high throughput computing. And to do that research, we need to get data back. So in the same way that the big colliders have all kinds of detectors through them, and in the same way that our big telescopes have cameras connected to them to get data, we need all kinds of monitoring and detectors and data coming out of our throughput systems. And that's what this session is kind of about. Our first speaker, Irving from UTLP, or UT El Paso, is going to talk about, is it Mincer? Mincer, soft C. Another new monitoring and, can I call it observability? Observability tool, which is what the cool kids call it. But thank you, Irving, and we're excited to hear about Mincer.
All right. Can you guys hear me fine? Okay, good. All right. Well, my name is Irvin Lopez. I'm from the University of El Paso, Texas, and we're here to talk about Mincer and how we're going to work with OSG for that. Let's see. So our table of contents will be the project overview, our goals, our implementation approaches, and DCGM and LDMS and Mincer containers, essentially. Then we're going to talk about a Docker Swarm for deployment, and I'll show you guys a demo of how we did it. So essentially, we have the project overview. So what is Mincer for you guys? Mincer is pretty much a containerized tools that will allow you guys to see in-depth, have in-depth insight and analysis for distributed heterogeneous computing environments, all right? So essentially, you guys get a lot of jobs in OSG. You guys get a lot of batch jobs and everything. What we want to see is what exactly is going on in those jobs. We don't necessarily need to see exactly what you guys are doing, but it would be cool to have like metrics on like how much CPU is being used, how much memory is being used. You know, just kind of like have more information on your, you know, whatever project you're running. Hopefully, that'll help you know, better schedule things or manage resources more efficiently. So essentially what we want to do in conjunction with OSG is that we would provide Mincer containers for integration. Those Mincer containers will be equipped with all the tools that you guys need,